This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Brooks Jensen, Anacortes, Washington. Master and Man by Leo Tolstoy. Section 8. Meanwhile, Vasily was using his heels and the spare end of the halter to urge the cob in the direction where, for some reason or another, he supposed the forest and the forest-keeper to be. The snow blinded his eyes, and the wind seemed as if it were struggling to stop him. But, bending forward at times to double the skirts of his coat and tuck them between his knees and the icy saddle-piece, which made his seat such an uncomfortable one, he pressed the cob onwards, unceasingly. The animal moved with difficulty, yet proceeded whither it was directed, in its usual docile manner. For what seemed to him some 5 minutes, Vasily rode straight ahead, seeing nothing in front of him but the cob's head and ears and a sea of whiteness, and hearing nothing but the whistling of the wind over the cob's ears and round the collar of his fur coat. Suddenly, however, something black showed up before him. His heart began to beat hopefully, and he rode towards the object, imagining that he already discerned in its outlines the walls of the houses forming a village. The object did not keep still, however, but was forever waving from side to side. In fact, it turned out to be not a village, but a tall piece of wormwood, which, growing out of the boundary ridge and projecting above the snow, bent violently over to one side each time the wind struck it and went whistling through its stems. Somehow, the sight of this wormwood thus tortured by the cruel wind caused Vasily to shudder, and he restarted the cob in haste, without noticing that, in turning aside to the wormwood, he had deviated from his former direction and was now riding at a tangent to it. Nonetheless, he imagined himself still to be bearing in the fancied direction of the forest keeper's hut, and although the cob kept trying to swerve to the right, he as often straightened it again to the left. For the second time, a dark object loomed up before him, filling his heart with joy, since he felt certain that this time here was a village at last. Yet it proved to be only another boundary ridge topped with wormwood. As in the case of the first one, the sound of the wind wailing through the dried stems seemed to fill Vasily with fear. This piece of wormwood was exactly similar to the other piece in all respects, save one, namely that beside this second piece ran the track of a horse's hooves, slightly powdered over with snow. Vasily pulled up, leaned forward, and looked at the track carefully. It was the track of a small-sized hoof, and the covering of snow upon it was, as yet, a mere sprinkling. In short, it was the track of his own cob. He had described a complete circle, and that not a large one. "So this is how I am to perish," he thought. Then, lest he should yield to his terror, he started forward again and urged the cob even more strenuously than before. At every moment, as he strained his eyes into the swirl of whiteness before him, he seemed to see dark points stand out for a second and then vanish as soon as he looked at them. Once he thought he heard what might have been either the barking of a dog or the howl of a wolf, but the sound was so faint and uncertain that he could not be sure whether he had really heard anything or whether it had only been his fancy. He stopped and listened attentively. Suddenly, a weird, startling cry sounded in his very ears, and everything beneath him seemed to heave and tremble. He clutched the cob's mane, yet found that it too was quivering, while the cry grew ever more and more piercing. For some seconds, Vasily could not frame a thought or understand in the least what was happening. Yet all that had happened was that the cob had been seized with the idea either of inspiriting himself or calling for help, and had neighed loudly in his raucous, guttural tones. "How the beast frightened me!" be hanged to it," gasped Vassili to himself. Yet although he understood now the cause of his terror, he could not shake himself free from it. "I must consider things a moment and steady myself," he thought. It was all to no purpose, for he could not master himself, could not keep from urging the cob on, taking no heed the while that he was now riding before the wind instead of against it. His body was chilled and aching all over, but especially in the lower part next to the saddle piece, where his coat was unhooked, whilst his hands and feet were shaking violently and his breath came in gasps. He felt sure now that he was to perish in the midst of this fearful waste of snow, and that nothing could save him. Suddenly, the cob gave a groan as it stuck fast in a snowdrift, and, struggling violently, began to sink sideways onto its flank. Vassili leapt off, displacing as he did so the trace loops in which his feet had been resting, and so also the saddle piece on which he had been seated. Yet he had no sooner dismounted than the cob righted himself, lurched forward, took a couple of plunges, and disappeared with a loud neigh, trailing behind him the sacking and the harness, and leaving Vassili stranded in the snowdrift. Vassili made a rush to catch him, but the snow was so deep and his fur coat so heavy that he sank knee-deep at every step, and had taken no more than 20 strides when his breath failed him and he had to stop. The timber, the wethers for the butcher, the rentold land, the store, the taverns, the iron roof, villa and warehouse, my little heir, am I to leave them all, he thought? Is it to end like this? No, no, it cannot be. For some reason or another, there came into his mind at that moment a picture of the wormwood waving in the wind, and of himself twice riding up to it. Such terror seized upon him that he could hardly believe in the reality of what was happening. I must be dreaming it all, he thought, and tried, as it were, to awake from his dream. Yet there was no awakening for him. It was a real snow that was lashing his face, heaping his form over, and chilling his right hand which had lost its mitten. It was a real desert, too, in which he was now left, lonely as the wormwood, and in which he must await an imminent, a swift, and an unthinkable death. O Queen of Heaven! O Holy Father St. Nicholas, who teaches us abstinence, he began, with a dim recollection of the Thanksgiving service of yesterday and the icon with its blackened face and gold vestment and the candles for that icon which he had sold and which, returned to him straightway, he had replaced in his locker after lighting them for a brief moment. Again and again he besought the wonder-working St. Nicholas to save him from his fate, promising in return a thanksgiving and many candles. Yet all the time he knew beyond the possibility of doubt that, although that blackened face and golden vestment, as well as the candles, the priest, and the thanksgivings, were all of them very important and necessary there in the church, they could do nothing for him here, and that between those candles and thanksgivings on one hand and his present forlorn plight on the other, there could be no real connection whatever. Still, I must not despair, he thought. I have only to follow the cob's track before it gets snowed over, and it will bring me out somewhere. Only I must not hurry too much, or I might plunge into another snowdrift and be worse off than ever. Nevertheless, for all his determination to go quietly, he could not help quickening his pace, breaking into a run, tumbling down continually, picking himself up again, and once more falling. Moreover, the cob's track was almost invisible where the snow was not deep. "I am done for," he said at last. "I am not following the cob's track at all, but only losing myself." Just as he said this, however, he happened to glance ahead and caught sight of something dark there. It was Brownie, and not Brownie alone, but also the shafts and the handkerchief. The cob was standing beside the sledge, with the harness and sacking still dangling down his flank, but standing in a different position to before, since he was just under the shafts and had his head, which he kept shaking at intervals, drawn close to the ground by the halter which had caught round his pastern. It seemed that Vassili had stuck fast in the same ravine as that into which Nikita and he had previously blundered, that, as a matter of fact, the cob had been carrying him straight back to the sledge, and that at the moment when he jumped off, he had been only 50 paces from it. This ends Section 8.